welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Welcome to Turn the Page podcast. This is Jessica, and I am so excited because I absolutely love the author we're going to be talking to today, and he has just published a horror book in the YA genre, which is the first of how many?
Three. It's the first of a trilogy.
So let's just dive right in. Like, what's the book, and who are you first?
My name is Robert P. Otone, and I'm the author of a couple collections of short horror fiction, but I have a book called The Triangle that's out now, courtesy of Raventail, and they are a new publisher, but they put out a lot of material, and this is their first YA venture, so I'm happy to be their inaugural launching point into the young adult sphere. But it is a cosmic horror novel, dystopian, little dystopian in there, and it's about how sea level rise has sort of ravaged the earth, and the cosmic entities that may or may not be behind that, and some of the spooky weird stuff that lurks in the mist of what used to be the Bermuda Triangle.
That's great. So wait a second, so it's cosmic horror, but would you say that there's a little bit of eco horror in it as well?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's I wanted to, because the environment and ecology and all that is very important to me. I wanted to sort of take the end point of what that could be and give it a weird fiction cosmic horror approach. So, you know, there's some hints as to the world before. The world has been submerged for about 80 years. So we're sort of seeing the end of the generation that knew what the world was like before the sea level rose. But for the most part, it's definitely got ties to, you know, cautionary tales of we have to protect the environment, we have to, you know, nurture our oceans, we have to clean everything up, we have to very clearly take care of the atmosphere and everything. So it does have a lot of ties to that, but with a juicy, cosmic, spooky, crittery bend to it.
So this is your first YA venture.
Yes.
Did you realize you were writing YA before you began? And I don't ask that in like a diminutive way. I ask it because the last collection that you published, I think that's how we sort of came together, was so good. But it was definitely more adult.
Definitely not for kids. Yeah.
I could see, especially the novella in the beginning, it's definitely adult, but it might be like crossover because it had aspects of new adulthood. But I know when people usually say new adult, it's usually romance that they're thinking, but it was almost like a horror anxiety story and a little bit of generational and, you know, like striking out on your own, but it was not for teenagers.
Yeah.
So was that your intent when you started writing these?
Yeah, I wrote the first one during my children's literature MFA program, which was a lot of fun. And the people I met and the mentorship that I received was fabulous. And so going into it, I knew I wanted to try, at the very least, I was looking at it as an exercise to try to write something in the young adult world. And I was reading a lot of young adult at the time. A lot of it I loved, some of it I was like, eh. But kind of across the board, I wanted to challenge myself to write something for a younger audience. And in this case, I wanted to do that, but I wanted to do it on my own terms. So I wanted to have elements of cosmic horror in the sense that, you know, I sort of see this book as like baby's first Lovecraft. And, you know, none of the controversial parts of Lovecraft are involved, of course, because I'm not racist. But at the same time, I wanted to sort of take things that Lovecraft played with and sort of that playground that he explored and bring that to kids. Because, and, you know, this has sort of been the rallying cry, I guess, that, you know, there's nothing more cosmic than becoming an adult. for a child. There's nothing weirder than that. It's the weirdest thing that'll ever happen to them. It's the strangest thing. Their bodies change. They don't turn into deep ones in real life, unless maybe they do. I don't know. But they do, in some ways, become corrupted by an outside force that changes them so much. And that's so cosmic. And it's so weird that exploring that in a young adult cosmic horror dystopian novel felt natural to me. But I know that it might be something that people can't like fully get into because it is cosmic horror and it does play in that playground. So, you know, I don't think it's a tough sell. I think a lot of the people who have read it and reviewed it really enjoy it. They just see it as a fun adventure on the high seas featuring some really creepy stuff, including two of Lovecraft's most famous creatures. But yeah, I don't think it's hard to sell. Yeah, there is some of that. There is a little bit of tentacly goodness.
Yeah, for those of you who are listening, which I hope you're listening. I don't know why I would even say it that way. For those listening right now to this, this is not a video podcast, but I just sort of made tentacles with my hands over my mouth to indicate a very famous Lovecraftian being.
Critter.
Yes.
And that critter pops up. They get mentioned in greater. They're referenced in the first book. They get mentioned by name in the second book, which has been turned in. Right before I hopped on with you, I had a meeting with our cover designer for the second book. And really the antagonist of these three books is one of Lovecraft's lesser gods, but that lesser god is very much so in service to the one that you were just impersonating.
I hope it was a decent impersonation.
I knew immediately. I was like, I know what you're doing. Imagine if I didn't know. First of all, what kind of writer would I be if I didn't know what you were doing? And number two, like, I would be the worst person alive. Like, no, that's awesome.
So talk a little bit about just the characters in this book. You mentioned this is a post-climate change world. And I've noticed, you know, just it's a father-daughter team.
Yeah, yeah. So I wanted to have a young lady protagonist, and I wanted her to be a little sort of on the spectrum of neurodiversity, because I feel like that's a very important thing, that, you know, all children should find a little bit of themselves in the character. I feel like, you know, more often than not that, you know, individuals of neurodiverse nature are not represented enough in fiction. So I wanted her to have some elements of that. Her dad is a single dad. The mom disappeared years earlier. And they scrap. They search the ocean looking for scrap to sell back home in their little community of Coral Cove, which takes center stage in the second book, but is part of the first book as well. But yeah, I just wanted to have a nice father-daughter. They have a nice relationship, but it is also very strained because the father is still dealing with the loss or the disappearance of his wife and the difficulty in raising a daughter. And also she's struggling because she's, you know, your everyday teenager. She makes mistakes. She's not perfect. I wouldn't have been interested in writing a story about a teenager who makes the right decision every time or is able to outthink every single person around them. She is remarkably capable, but she's not Superman. She's not Wonder Woman. She's not going to make the right choice every time. So they go out on a rescue mission to find a group of scouts who were sent from the only real form of government left. And of course, they're rooted in the northeast of what used to be America, because I feel like that's really the only area where buildings could still slightly be above water. So, of course, they're in New York, and they send scouts into the Bermuda Triangle to find something in particular. They are then lost. And now our lead character, Aslan, who's named after my niece, and her father, Merrill, go into the Bermuda Triangle, but also Aslan's best friend, Ellis, tags along for the trip. And he is a very capable young man. He's not the brightest, but he's a good shot. So at least there's that. But it's a lot of fun. Their relationship as friends is fun. His relationship to her father is interesting because he does not have parents. So almost he's like a product of the community. Everybody took turns raising him kind of thing. So it's a lot of fun. I don't know. Like, I feel weird talking about these characters because not everybody like read it. So they're probably just like, I don't know what this dude's talking about. But I would hope you check it out. It's a nice father-daughter story. Very much a coming of age kind of thing. And it's also got a lot of my dad in it and a lot of like how I feel about growing up in there. And it's so difficult, like being a teenager, everybody thinks like, oh, teenagers have it made. There's so much for them to do. It's like they really don't like at all. It's just as difficult for them now as it was for all of us when we were kids. So it's just difficult in a different way.
You make a very good point, and it's really always very frustrating to me when people who don't necessarily remember their teenage years fondly make a comment to like a teenager that it should be so easy.
No.
It seems so dismissive. And horror is a really good place to sort of play with that disconnect as well.
Yeah. And in becoming a teacher, I had to take a lot of teaching classes. And one of the classes was teaching in the middle school. And the best lesson, literally every single lesson culminated in this. Keep in mind, children are going through unfathomable changes to you as an adult. Even though you went through them, you can't understand because brains are soaking in chemicals that they've never experienced before. So the change is very real and it's very difficult for them. So I kind of try to keep that in mind, like not only as a teacher, but also as a writer, because so often I see writing for teenagers that is the cringiest thing that I have ever seen in my life. So like I always think in my mind, there's two things I want to avoid. I want to avoid writing teenagers that are cringy. And I want to avoid ending up on men writing women on Reddit. Those are my two goals as a writer, is to never do those things. So, yeah.
So about teenagers being cringy, you know, there's cringy in the way that teenagers are generally cringy, which is authentic and might not be comfortable to adults who don't want to remember that they were cringy. But I would imagine it is very difficult to be an adult and not write teenagers in a way that might come off that way. Like, what are some of the things you were trying to avoid, if you don't mind me asking?
I didn't want either of my two teen leads to really do anything that would specifically date them as teenagers. I wanted them to be able to express fears and concerns and feelings in the way that I've seen teenagers do it. Which has been, I've had some cringy kids as students, but I've had some remarkably mature emotionally and mentally. And I wanted to be respectful of that. So like, instead of having moments where like they'd be, where Aslan would be talking only about the boy that's her best friend or anything, you know, she's worried about everything else going on around her. And she's like, he's my friend. He wouldn't be my friend if he wasn't capable of handling himself. I'm not that worried about him. And stuff like that. And him, the same thing. He knows that she's capable. He trusts her. There's none of the usual like, oh my God, I have to save you. You're the damsel in distress. There is a moment where Aslan almost dies and her dad and Ellis do get involved, and that doesn't happen. But she, other than that, there's nothing in there that I wanted that felt inauthentic. And I guess, you know, working with kids is helpful with that. I've read a lot of really great work that has teenagers in it as leads. I actually just finished another thing that has a teenage lead, but that is for adults. And I think it's the important thing is to really, and I feel like, you know, people are always like, oh, well, men, how do men write women and how do they write kids? You just write them as people, you know, like that's the easiest way to do it. I don't know any other way to do it. So a child, for example, might not have the understanding of something, but like what kid doesn't seek clarity when they don't understand something? I don't know any kids who were ever like, oh yes, of course, that thing. They always ask, they're always curious because they want to grow and they want to understand. So like writing a kid who just goes with it and ignores something that's not realistic to me, because every kid questions everything, as they should.
So how did you find your publisher?
They were brand new, and I was really excited about the idea of having my first novel published with somebody new. And we got in touch, I think they reached out to me on social media, I think on Instagram. And then I wrote back, they gave me their email, they asked for the full manuscript, and I pitched it as a trilogy, which they went for. And we went back and forth a little bit on the contract. I had a lot of help from like people that I didn't think would give me a lot of advice and help, like the author Todd Kiesling, who's an amazing horror author. He gave me a lot of advice. Paul Tremblay, who's like one of the biggest authors, one of the biggest horror authors in the world, took time out of his day to give me advice on a contract. Like, what? That's crazy. So, you know, I had a lot of help, but I went back to them with the things that I wanted in the contract, and they went for it. And they were so happy with the first one, they added two more books in a separate thing to the contract. They have a whole separate initiative, and that first book is going to be out around September, October. And the second book in this trilogy will be out in like July-ish.
Wow. So people aren't going to have to wait too long to see what happens next.
Nope. And the second one is really thrilling to me, because I went into the second one in my mind thinking, like, I want to write a very terrifying action sequence. And I think I did. I know my beta readers liked it. I made it even worse and scarier after I gave it to them. But yeah, that was the whole thinking behind the second book, is I wanted there to be horror, but I wanted to tell a more intimate story while building the world out more. That was the goal, but also have this big sort of set piece going into the final act. And I'm happy with it. I'm really happy with it. We're also playing around with the idea of including an exclusive short story with the second book, which I think would be a lot of fun. So I might write a short story that is set in the same universe, but with a different group of people that'll serve as sort of like the lead into the second book in a way.
Thank you so much for doing this and chatting. I look forward to talking again soon.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
So once again, this was Jessica with Syosset Libraries Turn the Page podcast. My guest was
Robert P. Otone, author of The Triangle.
And we are going to close this chapter.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.